So me and TJ had to sleep a whole night in the axe-smelling tent. Every breath I could taste the smell, and I just got more and more angry. The night finally passed, and I woke up early in the morning before everyone else, so I could start with my master revenge plan. Was I tired? Maybe. But that's a sacrifice you have to make for vengeance. Every campsite had a water fountain coming out of the ground, connected to a PVC pipe. I found the biggest Ziploc freezer bag I could find and started to fill it up with water. It was obviously a slow process. I had plenty of time to reconsider, to think about what TJ said or what would happen after I got my revenge. But nothing stopped me. I was a squeaky-voiced, hormone-induced monster. Once the bag was full, I went back to my tent and woke TJ up. He got up and I told him to watch this. TJ actually had no part in the revenge plan. I just wanted to suck him down with me. I think TJ actually didn't want to get revenge. I ran towards the mega log tent and hid behind a real tent that was right next to the log one. Everyone was still inside. TJ still had no clue what I was doing. Until I chucked the bag over the real tent. If everything went according to plan, the bag would break on the roof, and the water would sink through the openings, and then they'd be super wet, LOL. That was the plan. I never saw the carnage my creation had done. I was worried that I'd completely miss the log tent. I never played any sports as a kid, so just making it over the first tent would have been an accomplishment. But the fact that everyone started screaming and one boy yelled, "Micah, I'm gonna kill you!" I knew it must have been the most perfect shot. Did I stay around and laugh at their stupid, guilty faces? No. Me and TJ ran away as fast as we possibly could, without looking back. We sprinted off into the woods before any 15-year-old saw us. We just kept running and running, making sure to get as far away from camp as possible. And on the way, I kinda threw up a little. TJ, being the good friend that he was, thought I was unfit to run, so he decided that we should hide in some bushes. After about 5 minutes, nobody came.
"Should we head back to camp?" "No." "Yeah, you're right."
So we kept running, until we found the lake where scouts could canoe in. Me and TJ both thought this was a good place to stop, so we sat by the lake and talked for a few hours. Because in a week, TJ and his family were going to move away to China for 2 years, and I knew I wouldn't see him again for a long time. So I wanted to spend every moment I had with him. We were just a couple of bros being real with each other, skipping rocks and talking about our feelings. And then that night, the 15-year-old's tent got axe-bombed. So I guess it wasn't them. Oh, and remember how I threw up after running so much? Well, apparently there was a sickness going around camp that all the camp instructors got, and about 50% of the scouts got it too. And lo and behold, one of the 15-year-olds wasn't feeling so well when he went to bed that night. And then the sudden jolt awake and the cold water made him throw up.
Yay!
Let's pretend you get on a bus and it's super crowded. The only spot that's open is between two strangers. So you sit down between two people you never met and everyone is fine. Everyone's keeping to themselves, no one's making eye contact, it's perfect. Sure, your shoulders are touching, but that's just what happens. That's part of the bus-going experience, you poor person. But then at the very next stop, aisle seat guy gets off. So now you and window seat guy are sitting right next to each other. But since you're in the middle, you have to be the one to decide, do you move or not? I honestly don't know what the right thing to do in that situation is. I'm conflicted. Because if you move, it would be silently telling the other person, hey, you're disgusting. I can't stand having our shoulders touch any longer, and I'm glad to finally get away from you. Ugh. But on the other hand, if I was the window seat guy, I would want the middle seat guy to become the new aisle seat guy. I wouldn't see moving as rude. I would just want his gross, disgusting body as far away from me as possible. That's not rude. But on the other hand, maybe I'm overthinking everything, and most people don't even mind being this close to another human, and they aren't struggling socially, I don't know. Now imagine that same situation, but with urinals. If you're in the middle urinal, do you move halfway through to the other urinal? Because I would. Are you supposed to talk to people when you're sitting 2 inches away from them? I always felt like I should say something, like, hey, did you see the game last night? I didn't. I was too busy drawing cartoons. But I realized that this is a two-way street. I'm worried about not talking to someone, but they're not talking to me either. We both agreed that there's this unwritten contract between us that we're not even going to look at each other. It got me thinking about strangers and specifically how I treat them. And how I can make money off of them. Hey-oh! I'm just kidding. That was a joke. For most of my life, I would go out of my way to avoid talking to people. I would stay in my lane, mind my own business, no eye contact. If everyone's using a urinal, I'd have to pee tomorrow. Yes, I'm lonely. But now that YouTube's the thing, I'm interacting with strangers more often than I've had to in my entire life. So I've been thinking a lot about strangers. And first of all, I think the word stranger is already an insulting label for someone just because you don't know their name. Oh, I don't know this person. They're a stranger. They're strange. I'm the normal one. They're the freaks. They probably murder people with an axe. That's always the go-to profession of a stranger, an axe murderer. But the people you see throughout your day are all humans with their own hopes and dreams, and some of them may hope to kill you, but you'll never know because you didn't ever take the time to get to know them. So I think that the people you see throughout your daily life aren't strangers. They're potential friends. Except for the weird ones, obviously. Stay away from them. And yes, I'm telling you to judge people based on their appearance. They're the ones that chose to wear anime shirts in public, okay? So back to the bus scenario. I'm sitting right next to this fellow human being. So far, there's not a single reason why I should dislike this person. But I don't know why, if you put him and me on a bus next to each other, I want him as far away from me as possible. Just stop touching my shoulder! So that was the last time I took the bus. Unfortunately, that's not the only place you meet strangers. One time I was at Home Depot, and I was looking for jumper cables, and I couldn't find them anywhere. And I don't know if I'm the only human that's like this, but I will try everything in my power to not talk to a sales associate. I guess it's because I know they get paid minimum wage, and their life sucks, and I just want to leave them alone and not make their job any harder than it has to be. But asking employees for help isn't even bothering them that much. In fact, I think it's part of their job? Like, what's the worst thing they're gonna say? Ugh! You don't know where one specific item is? Everyone else knows. Did you even look? They're in the jumper cable aisle, idiot. No one's gonna think that. So feeling desperate, I mustered up what little courage I had and swaggered up to someone wearing an orange vest and said, excuse me, do you know where the jumper cables are?
I don't work here.
Oh, you don't work here? And then he walked away.
And then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. And then the very next day, bum, bum, bum.
So I think the logical thing to do in that situation would have been to find someone who does work there. But I left the store because I didn't want to run into that same guy again. But I also bought a hammer because I didn't want people to think that I stole something. So...
oh, yeah.
And by the way, if you wear an orange vest to Home Depot, just expect people to ask you for help. Same goes for people who wear red shirts at Target. You'd think I'd learn from my mistakes, but no, I have a bunch more examples. When my book came out, my publisher said that it was going to be carried at Barnes & Noble, and I thought that was super duper cool and wanted to see my book in the wild. Not to buy or anything, just to have a look at. So I took my friend Adam from Something Else YT, and we went to the local Barnes & Noble and started our search. We looked in the humor section, didn't find it. Then we checked the new release section, it wasn't there either. Then we looked at the best-selling section, then the religious section, but we couldn't find the book anywhere. So either the publisher lied, or they had already sold out. But just to be sure, I asked one of the workers, hey, do you guys have a book by The Odd Ones Out? He kind of looks like this. And the worker typed something out on his computer and said, oh yeah, we got those in the back, we just haven't put them out yet. So then he went to the back room, brought out a copy and handed it to me saying, here you go, kid. And I thought, Well, frick. I can't just hand it back to the guy and say, oh no, that's okay. I didn't want to buy it. I just wanted to have a look at it. Do you know how inconvenient that would be? So the only less awkward option I could think of was to buy my own book. And you know what? I'd get a couple cents back from this purchase, so it wouldn't have been a total loss. But Adam, being the more sensible one, said,
dude, this is ridiculous. You have to come clean.
So then he went to the worker and said,
so he actually wrote this book? He just wanted to get a look at it, like, in the wild.
And the worker said, oh, that's so cool. Do you want to sign our copies? And then I thought, well, hold on. You're not even going to ask me for my ID? How do you know I actually wrote this book and I'm not some guy trying to deface someone else's? And then the guy gave me a whole stack of my books and I signed them all. Last story before I go. I was in the hallway of a building and me and this potential friend crossed paths. He said, hello. And I was going to respond with, hello, and how's it going? But I combined the two and ended up saying, how? And then I jumped out a window and fell to my death. I can't rationalize that behavior. Maybe I spend too much time on the computer and I'm not used to looking at real people's faces, but I'm trying to change. Don't get me wrong, going to conventions and meeting fans has helped me a lot with talking to people. Granted, those conversations are usually one-sided and a real stranger won't already know who I am, but they've still helped me. Now, you might be expecting me to give you advice on overcoming social anxiety, but if you watch this video, you know I'm not the most qualified to give that advice, but I'll try my best. I know it's hard to feel confident and I'm still working on it, but you have to understand that we're all people and we all have things that we're struggling with. And in reality, we're not all watching or caring about every little thing that other people do. We're all too busy worrying about what other people think of us. So with enough practice and believing in yourself, you can show the world your true colors and I think you'll find that people are a lot nicer than you think. So if you're the middle seat guy on the bus and you have to decide whether or not to move, do whatever you want. No one cares. Just stop touching my shoulders. If you thought my family owned a lot of hamsters, wait till I tell you about all the cats we had. Just a heads up, though, some of these cats are dead. They all lived 9 happy lives. None of them had a painful death. Except for one, maybe. We don't know. We'll get into that. So cats. Some people think cats are jerks and not as loyal or loving as dogs. And they're right, but if you think about it, cats improve our lives every day. Think back to YouTube in 2006. What was popular? Cat videos. If it wasn't for cats, we wouldn't have YouTube as a platform. Which, I could make the argument, is another jerk thing cats did. Now, I'm a cat lover, and anyone who says they dislike cats has obviously never snuggled up with a cat and had it purr on your chest as you pet it for so long that you both fall asleep and all your anxieties melt away and the only thing you care about is your fragile feline friend. Or they're allergic. Honestly, I think I'm slightly allergic to cats as well, because every time I snuggle up with one, my eyes get all watery, my nose gets all stuffy, but like, I can deal with that. Maybe this is what love feels like. People like to put everybody into two categories. Either you're a dog person or a cat person. But why do I have to pick just one? Can't I look at these two animals and say that both of them have good qualities that make them amazing pets? Why can't I pick both? I'm bisexual for animals. Wait. That being said, here's all the cats I had growing up. So our family had just moved to our new house and we're all getting ready to go to church when my older brother, who was outside for some reason instead of getting ready, heard noises coming from a bush. And when he went to investigate, he found a little baby tabby kitten. He told my parents about the cat and they said its mom was probably looking for it, but if the cat was still there when we got back from church, then we could let it inside. And after we got back, my brother checked the bush and the cat was still there. So we took her in, we fed her, and we decided to name her Shady after Eminem's The Real Slim Shady because she was an obnoxious cat and didn't like us at all. Yeah, but she's so cute though. And that's how our family got our one and only cat. One cat is enough. There are no more cats. Until one night when I was sitting at the kitchen table and through the window of the back door, I saw two yellow eyes staring at me. And as a kid, I still thought monsters were real. So I pointed it out to my family, hey, there's eyes outside. And everyone turned and was like, what the? So we opened the back door, and a piece of the night just walked into the house like it lived there or something.
Does this mean we have bad luck?
Apparently, just waltzing in our house uninvited is a very effective strategy to get adopted, because she ended up living with us for the rest of her cat life. My older sister loved Sailor Moon, and in the show, there's this black cat named Luna. Spoiler alert, Luna's actually an alien that can turn into a human sometimes, but most of the time she's just a cat. So we named the cat after her. And little old Luna fit great in our home. We were your standard nuclear family with two cats. Just two. We never got another cat ever again. Until one day, this other cat appeared in our backyard. We put Luna's and Shady's food bowls outside, which meant our backyard was basically a cat sanctuary for any cat that could jump our fence. And sometimes we would see this calico cat hanging out in our backyard. We didn't know if she already had a home, and she would run away from us if we got close. So, we left out a third food bowl for her. And then she invited some of her siblings along because two other cats decided to chill in our backyard. And one of the cats was a boy, which meant we had to get all five cats neutered. And just like that, we more than doubled the amount of cats we had. We were feline pretty good. Three more cats added to the family, because why not? That's the perfect amount of cats if you ask me. I'm going to name them now! What? We're not getting three more cats. Two is enough. What? We can't just kick them out. We're going to find them a new home, but we're not keeping them.
Okay.
Also, you're not allowed to name them. If you name them, then you'll get attached to them, and we're not keeping them. So since our mom banned us from naming the cats, we called them the Calico Cat and the two other ones. And we kept calling them this until our mom found them a new home. Turns out that their new home was our home, because my mom never found them a new home. So we just left them food outside, and they were happy with that relationship. They would let you pet them, sometimes, and even sit on your lap, but if you tried to pick them up, they would hiss and bite you. They did not like being picked up or being inside. They were feral cats. One time it was raining, so we thought it would be a good idea to bring the Calico Cat inside, but she freaked out. She hissed and scratched us. She hated being inside more than she hated the rain. And by the way, cats can be very loud. Like, as loud as dogs. They just never raise their voices. They're too proper for that. So since she didn't like being inside, we just put her back outside in the pouring rain. We ended up naming the boy cat Spot, the other cat we named Pepper, and the Calico... We didn't change her name. We named her Calico. That's like naming a dog Golden Retriever or Chihuahua. I don't know if that's sad, but you know what is sad? One day, Spot just disappeared. He stopped showing up to the house, and we never saw him again. I hope he found a good home, but who knows, you know? Maybe he went off to start a second life, or a fifth or sixth life. Get it? Because they have nine lives. Yeah, but he's probably dead. And then, I was in high school when Shady died. She had a good home with us, but it was her time to go. So we were down to three cats, and we never got another cat ever again. But then one day, my parents were out on a walk, and my mom saw a scrawny black kitten on the side of the road, and she said, "Can we keep it?" But my dad said, "No, keep walking, keep walking." And then on their way back from the walk, for some reason my dad didn't take a different route, the cat was still there, meowing at them. So my parents brought her home, and my twin sister named her Pepsi. My sister really loved Pepsi. I was more of a Coke person myself. But when my sister went off to college and I stayed home for community college, we let Pepsi outside one day, and she didn't come back. We didn't know how to tell my sister that our cat was missing, so we didn't. But we were all really worried. We put up missing posters, and after almost 2 months of being missing, she just appeared in the backyard. I don't know what happened in that two-month period. She looked fine. Maybe she got adopted by another family, and now some poor family is missing their cat, Salem. Maybe she went out looking for my sister and got lost. Maybe she started acting in some Japanese TV shows. Who knows? But we found her. We didn't even tell my sister that her cat had been missing until after we found Pepsi. So she wasn't very happy about that. Then Luna passed away. It was sad, but cats don't live forever. Sorry. Sailor Moon wasn't even a good show anyway. Now, longtime Odd Ones Out fans might know this next story. My older brother found another kitten at the gym he worked at, brought her home, and named her Azula. But the name Azula didn't stick because we found out that Azula was a dude. I was the one, by the way, who saw Azula's firebenders and told everyone. Just wanted to get that part of the story straight. So Azula's name had to change, and while this was happening, we had a French foreign exchange student living with us, and she didn't know the word for kitten, so she called him Zababycat. And then we all started calling him Zababycat, and now that's his name, Babycat. That's how he got his name, Babycat. Since we're on the topic of pets, I have something that I probably should have mentioned a while ago. For the most part, I try to keep this channel goofy and lighthearted, which is probably why I waited so long to tell you this. But around Christmas of 2017, my dog Georgie passed away. You might remember her in some of my older videos. She was 13 years old, and just like the cats, it was her time to go. Yes, it was sad, but That's what happens to pets. They become your best friend, but they're not in your life forever. So if you have pets, remember to appreciate them now. I wouldn't have changed anything about Georgie's life. She was a good dog. Sorry, that part got a little personal. And my dog Poppy did not take Georgie's death very well, so my parents had to get an emotional support dog for their dog, and they got Jax, because he liked to jump, so he was their Jumping Jax. Aw, what a good name.
You might be thinking that me giving you advice on pitching a show is insincere or not applicable because of that. But listen, there was still a whole lot of work that went into my pitch for a TV show, and even with all my subscribers, statistically, I still got turned down way more times than I got picked up. If Netflix is just green-lighting everyone with a big sub count, then why doesn't I Did a Thing have a show, huh? Why doesn't Mr. Beast have a Netflix show? Oh, actually, he's doing just fine. By the way, if you are someone with a lot of subscribers, don't just walk into a studio and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs, give me a show," okay? Walk in and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs and free merchandise for you," okay? Diversification is key. Networks like Netflix, Cartoon Network, and Nickelodeon, they're in the biz of making content for their platform and in turn getting you, the viewer, to watch said content on said platform, thus generating a perpetual money-making cycle that everyone, including you, benefits from. Now, the executives in charge don't have all the time to come up with every single show they're going to make, so they turn to the general public, open their doors, and will listen to anyone pitch them their idea for a television series. But even if you have an Emmy-winning idea, if you're not able to properly sell your idea and win over the hearts of the network executives, it's not going to get picked up and developed. Then your only option is to independently fund and develop your idea yourself. But what kind of a loser would do that? And thus the art of pitching a show is born. You could honestly teach a whole class about this. Now, obviously, you can't just walk into a studio empty-handed. All right, big idea. What if we do a show where there's a talking alligator, right? And he's like, "Yo, what? I'm a crocodile." You gotta come prepared, but also not be over-prepared. I was actually surprised to learn this, but going into the pitch room with finished scripts, turnarounds of your characters, and plushies will actually hurt your chances of getting picked up. The reason for this is because executives will sometimes like to change parts of your show, and if you already have all the characters and story mapped out, they'll not want to pick you up because they feel like they can't change anything. You're not even supposed to write any scripts until after you get the green light, because the executives have to approve all the scripts you make and the writers that you want to hire. So if you ever pitch a show, just be open for changes. Which, I can attest, is a very different experience to what it's like on YouTube. What you do want to bring to the pitch is this super important document called a show Bible, and then you need to convert to that show's religion. The show Bible is a document that contains everything your audience needs to know about your show. In the beginning of a show Bible, there should be a 1-2 sentence description that covers the main synopsis of your show. It's kind of like an elevator pitch, but here in the biz, we call it a log line. I'll give you mine as an example. When James's parents move them to a tiny desert town where eccentric scientific minds have been brought together to do unfettered experiments, James finds himself surrounded by the children of these scientists and the offspring of their experiments. The result? Unlike in his last town, James is no longer the oddest kid around. I don't know if the show's been out by the time this video comes out, but we kinda lost the new in town theme. Like I said, the executives want to make changes. After the logline, you write a page-long backstory where you go more in-depth with your idea. Answer questions like, who are the characters? What are their goals? Where do they live? Just general stuff, because after the backstory page, you're gonna write all about your characters. This is the part of the Bible where you can just go balls to the wall with details and description. Who, how, and why are your characters? What are their wants, needs, fears, flaws, likes, dislikes, and general personality traits? These are important traits to think about, even if a specific detail isn't going to be reflected in the show. Like, in my Bible for the crocodile, Max, some of the things we said he liked were the rain, raw chicken, and laying on warm rocks in the sun.
Now, I don't think you got to enjoy a single one of those things in the show, but these are the types of questions you have to answer to get the clearest idea of who your characters are.
You should also include drawings of your characters. This can help show their personality and body language, but just keep them to doodles, because, again, they're subjected to change. Next, there needs to be drawings and descriptions of specific locations that the characters spend a lot of time in. This will help show the overall world and tone of the show. And lastly, I know it's long, that's why it's called a show Bible and not a show pamphlet. You need to write out page-long episode ideas, not scripts. This will show the executives what a typical episode would look like and the direction and tone you want to go with the show. Honestly, there's so much that goes into a show Bible. I'm really only scratching the surface. If you are genuinely interested in pitching a show, or even a little interested in cartoons, then I would highly recommend looking at other show Bibles online for inspiration and how they should be formatted. It's pretty fun looking through older show Bibles and seeing the earliest versions of your favorite cartoons. This is what Mermaid Man and Barnacle Bill were going to look like. I mean, look, isn't that cool? Unfortunately, you can't just hand an executive your show Bible and silently wait for them to finish reading it. You also have to energetically and flawlessly pitch your show. Executives listen to, 9 pitches a day. So if you're not selling your show with 110% enthusiasm, they're going to pass right over you. So you have to practice your pitch like your paycheck depends on it. Me and the showrunner I worked with, Ethan Banville, practiced our pitch so many times. We practiced in front of a mirror to our family members. We filmed ourselves practicing and then watched the footage, gave each other notes, and then burned the evidence. We memorized our whole Bible, but despite everything, the first time we pitched, I was still nervous. I had no idea what pitching a show would be like. We brought in our stapled Bible that we typed out on Microsoft Word, and I thought, this isn't enough. This Bible doesn't even have a spine. I still thought we needed to bring in finished scripts and character designs to show the executives how much thought we put into the show. But Ethan reassured me, No, the executives don't want to be overwhelmed with content. But when we got to the lobby, I saw the group ahead of us pitching their show, and they had cardboard cutouts of their characters, and they were handing the executives custom plushies, and I turned to Ethan, we are so underprepared. When we got inside, we pitched the show just like we practiced 1,000 times, and then the executive told me that no studio would ever want to work with a YouTuber. Yeah, sometimes they don't even wait to tell you in an email that they're going to pass. Sometimes they just get it over with right then and there. So, not the best confidence boost for your first pitch. But we kept on pitching, and we kept hearing a lot of no's. And if you ever pitch, get ready to hear that response. Everyone in Hollywood has a story of being turned down by everyone, and then finding the right home for their idea. And sometimes really talented people work for years on an idea, and it goes nowhere. So the fact that I was even able to make something and it didn't get canceled, I'm incredibly grateful for. But getting a show greenlit is not the only way to get it made. You can always put in the work and develop something yourself. No, you won't have a network backing you with tons of money, but if you truly believe in your idea, you should at least put something out for the world to see and over time build your own audience and then, who knows, maybe even sell it to a network. But not the one who said they never work with a YouTuber. They're horrible. Okay. That's all the time I got. I gotta get back to watching Oddballs streaming October 7th on my Netflix. If you're one of those kids that spends too much time on that darn computer machine, then conventions are a great place to get the recommended amount of human interaction with others who share a similar interest. Or at least, they were. You might have seen some conventions in the news recently, the ones like VidCon, Comic-Con, and E3, but did you know there's conventions for all sorts of different things, like coin collecting, pens, and degenerates? The first convention I ever went to was in Arizona called Phoenix Comic-Con. I was 16 years old, and it, no exaggeration, changed my life. I had heard a lot about geek culture online, but Phoenix Comic-Con was the very first time I witnessed it in its fullest. I was a very sheltered kid. It was the first time I'd seen a brony and a furry and whatever this is in the wild. That changes a person. I was told that it was not cool to like geeky things, and as a 16-year-old, I tried really hard to make it seem like I didn't secretly like a bunch of geeky things.
But people at Comic-Con just embrace nerd culture, like they didn't care what people thought of them or something. Is that allowed?
I guess when I was 16, I was hyper-desperate to receive everyone's approval. I was so hyper-desperate that while walking around my first convention, I was stressing out that I wasn't in cosplay. Oh, all these pop culture characters are judging me because I'm not wearing any makeup. To this day, I still haven't ever cosplayed, but it looks like a lot of fun. If I did cosplay, I would want to go as this quadrupedic horse. Also Spark from Pokemon Go. I went to one panel called How to Make Steampunk Weapons, but instead of teaching us how to weld real-life weapons powered by steam, the people on the panel taught us how to paint Nerf guns to make them look like they were powered by steam. And that was, no exaggeration, the most disappointing panel I've ever been to. There was also a panel for bronies, but I was too chicken to go. Did I mention that my grandfather, who I'm named after, got drafted into World War II when he was 18? He fought in a war so I could go to a comic convention and be too nervous to talk to bronies. What a different life we had. At most conventions, people in the expo hall will sell a lot of super cool unlicensed merchandise. Yeah, a lot of artists will sell prints and plushies and oven mitts with characters and titles they probably didn't get the license to sell, but if it's at a convention or on Etsy, then for some reason it's okay. I've always felt weird about buying that type of merch. On one hand, you shouldn't be allowed to make money off of someone else's intellectual property without the owner's consent. But on the other hand, look at this cool Bowser wallet, Bowser print, and Bowser bandana that I own. And this body pillow. It's a moral gray area because the people buying this type of merch are the hardcore fans. They know of the property these characters came from. They probably already own licensed merch of the character. The artist isn't claiming to have created the character either. It's a mutual understanding between buyer and seller that we both think Bowser is cool and we just want to buy as much merch as possible. You kind of have to take it on a case-by-case basis, but let me just say this to get it out there. You're not allowed to sell bootleg Got One's Out merch. Phoenix Comic-Con actually had to change the name of their convention to Phoenix Fan Fusion because the people at the San Diego Comic-Con didn't like that Phoenix was stealing their name. So these conventions that don't care about stealing other people's copyright are forcing others to respect their copyright. Interesting. As some of you may know, since 2012, I have become a little more successful. And in 2019, I got invited to be a guest at Phoenix Fan Fusion, which is my home convention. The really crazy part is the convention put me in the celebrity line, like next to the people where you have to pay for photos and autographs. I didn't charge my fans for anything, so that made my line appear a lot longer than others. And my line was, no exaggeration, right next to Jeff Goldblum's line. I was gonna make eye contact with Jeff Goldblum! Jeff showed up for a couple hours on Saturday, and when he came out from backstage, everyone in his line and my line started wooing and clapping, and even I was like, woo! And then Jeff took a look at my line, then looked at me, and then gave me a nod of approval, saying, not bad, kid. He didn't say it out loud, but I could tell he said it with his eyes. He also said that I looked kind of cute, so thanks, Jeff. The first time I went to VidCon, that also, no exaggeration, changed my life. Again, it was the first time I met all these YouTubers that I've been watching for years, and okay, I'll admit, at first I was kind of fanboy-y, but I've gotten completely desensitized meeting other YouTubers and feel no joy anymore. When I meet another YouTuber, I say, oh, you make videos in your bedroom? Me too. People know that you're a bedwetter too, right? No? That's just me then. If you've ever given me something at a convention, then you'll be happy to know that I've kept everything I've ever been given. Unless you're the guy that gave me a plastic baggie full of water and other junk and called it a homemade snow globe. I used to collect snow globes, so it was a nice sentiment, but I didn't want to take it home with me and have it inevitably break and get all the important fan art wet. So I chucked it. And as I'm telling you this, there's some poor kid out there going, hey, he's talking about my snow globe. He threw it away? And now I feel bad, so...
Here, I'll mail this to you and you can get a taste of your own medicine.
I don't know why this is such a popular question, but a lot of times people will ask me, what's the weirdest fan interaction you've ever had? I think they think that some of you are cringy.
I never have an answer for them because all my fans are super nice. Yeah, someone gave me a bag of water, but that's not weird, that's nice!
Okay, I have received fan mail from a prison, which is true, so I guess some of you aren't law-abiding citizens. Going to conventions and meeting fans and being on panels is a lot of fun, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't give you a lot of time to really experience the convention. Since 2017, when I would go to a convention, it would mean I was working. I still had a fun time, but I didn't really get to just relax with friends. That is, until I went to a convention last December called MFF, which stands for Midwest Fur Fest. Now, James, did you go to a furry convention? Well, I went with some friends to a furry convention so that I could actually enjoy a convention and not have to work. Although I still got recognized even though I was wearing a disguise. Furries are very touchy people, I've learned. Not touchy as in overly sensitive. Well, some probably are. But they're also literally touchy. Let me tell you where I'm at in my life right now. Last December, I was in an elevator full of furries and... if my grandpa could see me now, he would probably be frowning. Or smiling, I don't know, I don't judge. We were all crowded in, there was a moose breathing down my neck, and we stopped at a floor because more furries wanted to come in. So I backed up to make more room, but I backed up a little too close to the moose, and he grabbed my hips and I went, ah! In my mind, I didn't say it out loud. In real life, I went, So that was probably the weirdest fan experience I've had, if you were still wondering. I don't know if he was a fan of my YouTube, but he was definitely a fan of my body. Or he was drunk. I don't know. Again, I don't judge. I was debating on whether or not I should include this story, but I think it would be a good lesson for everyone to hear. Here's my James PSA. This message is for everyone, and especially furries. Don't touch people without their permission. In the moment, I stayed quiet, but that sort of behavior isn't okay and I should have spoken out. Hopefully, most of you are mindful of other people's personal space. However, comma, at least one of you went to prison, so... I don't know. Overall, it was the best ironic trip ever. At the end of the day, conventions are a lot of fun, and I really, really miss going to them. And when it's safe to do so again, I recommend you try and go to one you're interested in. And Grandpa, I'm sorry if I disappointed you.
And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92.
I'm 93. Do I still count?
No, Grandpa, we hate you. Just so you know, that gag was based off a comic I made back in 2014. So I wanted to make a Christmas video, but I didn't know what to talk about. So we're just gonna sit here and roast marshmallows by this PNG of a fire. Do you guys know about that soccer game that happened in the middle of World War I on Christmas Day? And it was between two opposing sides, the Allies and the Central Powers? I'm not making this up. So German and British troops were in the trenches, you know, fighting for their lives. They were in the middle of a war, after all. And on Christmas Eve, German troops started singing Christmas carols. Then the British troops responded singing their own Christmas carols. Then one thing led to another, and on Christmas Day, they started playing soccer. Well, the British troops would have called it football, and the German troops would have called it football. But I'm calling it soccer. Yeah, I know I'm a heretic. I don't think anything like that has happened in a war ever. Except for that one time in the Revolutionary War when everyone stopped fighting because the new Super Smash Brothers just came out. Merry feet! Merry feet! Tis not Falco! Wamba with combination!
Oh!
Oh! Where art thou? Okay, that was obviously a joke. Man, they didn't come out for at least, like, another year. Stupid. Anyway, what I'm wondering is, do you think anyone during that game felt a little bit awkward? So, how's the war? Oh, you're fearing for your life? Well, that's good. That's good. That means we're doing a good job. Do you think whoever won the game of soccer bragged to the other team?
Ha ha! Yes! First we beat you at football, next, the world.
Ah, dang it, my marshmallow burned. Does the story of Rudolph count as a fable? What would the moral of Rudolph be? I think it would be, being different from society will be punished unless it's exploitable. Okay, I stole that quote from something I saw on the subreddit, I'm 14 and this is deep. How come no one sings any songs about any of the other reindeer? Rudolph saved Christmas once, and like, he didn't do it alone. Just because he could see through the snow, which, by the way, wouldn't have been useful in Arizona, didn't mean he carried Santa's sleigh all by himself. But no, just because you were bullied as a kid, you get your own song. Well, enough about you going down in history, Rudolph. I'm going to make my own song about Prancer.
Do-do-do. Prancer, the normal-nosed reindeer, had a very normal nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say, yep, that's a nose. All of the other reindeer respected him for meeting the expectations of what a normal reindeer should be like. They always let little Prancer play on his reindeer bike.
Okay, I'll stop. What if the reason Rudolph had a shiny nose was because Rudolph's mom had an affair
with a clown.
That was based off a comic I made in 2014. Why did the three wise men bring baby Jesus, gold, Frankenstein, and myrrh? What kind of baby would want that? Okay, that was also based off a comic I made in 2014. Man, 2014 was just my year. Please read my comics. You know what? I'm not done talking about Rudolph. You guys have all seen the stop-motion movie they made about him in the 60s, right? You know, about the elf who wants to be a dentist. So who wouldn't?
Why weren't you at elf practice?
Well, there's one scene in the movie where Yukon Cornelius sacrifices himself to kill the abominable snowman, and he saves all of his friends, and also indirectly saves Christmas, but whatever, he doesn't get a song. But then later in the movie, he just walks through the front door, and everyone's wondering how he survived, and Rudolph even says,
But you went over the side of a cliff!
And then Yukon tells everyone the answer,
Didn't I ever tell you about bumbos?
Bumbos bounce! And then everyone just laughs it off like it was a hilarious joke and doesn't ask him any more questions. Even as a kid, I thought that was a stupid explanation. What does that mean, bumbos bounce? Like, did you two fall off the cliff, and then when you hit the bottom, just trampoline yourself all the way back up? Oh wait, no, I think I know what it means. It means the writers didn't want to kill off a character, so they just came up with a plot device to make him live. You know, because you can't have death in a kid's movie! No one dies. Not even the bad guy dies. How does Santa deliver to houses without chimneys? I think Tim Allen tried to explain it once. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this video. I kept it short so that way I have more time to spend Christmas with my family, and it also gives me more time to wrap presents. Because, you know, I'm just terrible at rapping.
Piñatas. I love piñatas. It's perfect for when you want to beat something to death, but also want candy.
Why do they make it look so pretty? Most of the time when you're playing with it, it looks like this.
What the, Alex, what are you doing here?
I just wanted to know what it would feel like to have a billion subscribers.
No, go, get out. Go back to It's Alex Clark and wait your turn.
Okay, fine.
Don't come back unless you have cake! Piñatas. Here's a story that involved me when I was a first grader in a piñata. I don't know if any of you guys did this in your elementary school, but when it was someone's birthday, that kid would bring treats for the whole class. And then the whole class would take 10 minutes, stop everything they're doing, and then pass out the pastries to everyone. How come we don't do that anymore? In high school, depending on the teacher, they don't do anything for your birthday party. And in college, heck, no one even talks to you. So I have a twin sister, and we were in the first grade together. So when it came time for our birthdays, we had to celebrate two birthdays. It's double birthdays. We gotta do something extra special. My mom had an idea. Let's do a piñata. But since my mom is super cheap, she decided to make her own piñata out of paper mache. And it turns out making homemade piñatas are easy. All you gotta do is blow up a balloon, cover it in paper mache, wait for it to harden, pop the balloon inside, cut a hole open, fill it with candy, cover the hole back up with paper mache, paint it, and then beat it senseless. Simple. So my mom went above and beyond and made a sphere piñata for our entire first grade class. Me and my sister's birthday is towards the end of the school year. And in elementary school, that last week of school, like, you don't even do anything. It doesn't even count. So hopefully my teacher wasn't too mad at what was about to transpire. My sister and I were just pumped the whole school day. Because we helped build the piñata. We helped paint it, and now we're going to help beat it to pieces. The teacher eventually called out,
"All right, class, James's mom made us a piñata, so we're all going to go outside and whack it."
Oh, yes, this was perfect. It was our birthday. We gotta beat up a piñata at school. I have the best mom. Me and my sister got a swing first because we're the birthday boys. We didn't end up breaking it, but I wasn't mad. Let these other non-birthday people have some fun. I'm a generous guy. Hey, in the end, I just want the candy. So the next guy goes up, then the next, and then eventually everyone got a turn. Well, a piñata is supposed to break, ain't it? Apparently, my mom was a little precautious and put a few extra layers of paper mache on the piñata so that way, everyone would get a turn! Yay! And apparently, she also overestimated the strength of paper mache and first graders. But did this teacher let the whole class down? No. You know what she did? Bless her soul. She said,
"All right, class, we're all gonna take turns throwing this against a curb."
I mean, what other option did this teacher have? She could have stabbed it, but I don't think that would have been very fun. Looking back, she might have just been wanting to speed up the process, but as a group of 7-year-olds, we had a blast. Also, I'm glad the piñata was not in the shape of an animal, because imagine how traumatizing that would have been as 7-year-olds to curb stomp a unicorn. We would have been like little tiny mob bosses. Alright, Tony, you ready to give up the candy? Such a shame you feel that way, Tony. Bruce?
I'm glad my mom was so thoughtful putting all those layers of paper mache in the pinata, because we all got a turn throwing the pinata on the ground. I remember getting so into it. I remember jumping up in the air before smashing the pinata onto the pavement. Nothing was going to get in between me and whatever candy was in there. Pretty soon, though, we were all getting pretty antsy. Everyone was like, I was promised there'd be candy. Eventually, after what felt like an eternity of beating this pinata into the ground, we got a rip. I don't know if you guys saw the first episode of The Walking Dead. It's actually the only episode I've ever seen. And there's a scene in the first episode where the zombies rip open a horse and eat its organs. Well, that was pretty much what it looked like after we got a rip in the pinata. I don't remember what candy was in there, but hopefully it was worth it. And that was probably the best and worst pinata I ever broke.
Did you know that 99% of everything I've ever said on this channel has been written out ahead of time, including the mispronunciation of the word percent? It would be 100% scripted, but, you know, the drawing challenge videos, you can't really script that kind of content, so... Or can you? But every other video has had a script, and that includes the worst video I've ever made, my very first one.
So you know those books you make in a...
I'm gonna stop it right there because I physically cannot watch another nanosecond of my first video. I want to take it down so bad, but I'm keeping it up so you can see how much I've improved. Because like it or not, the very first thing you make of something is going to be bad. But you have to make the bad thing first so you know how to make things good. The point is, even that sad excuse of a video was scripted. And today, I want to talk about what goes on in the script writing process and how I get inspiration and some tips for writing better scripts. Because if I write something I'm not 100% happy with, then I'm stuck working on a crappy video for the next month. Like this one. People often tell me, "Oh, I want to make YouTube videos, but my life's super boring. I wish I could have an exciting life like yours." And I always respond with, "My most popular series is about me talking about working at a minimum wage small local sandwich shop. A script does not need to be an edge of your seat, high stakes level story. It needs to be an entertaining story. And I believe if told in a certain way, any story can be an entertaining story." The first piece of advice that I can give that will immediately improve your scripts is, drumroll please, in 5, 4, 3, getting to the point. Because I do animation, the longer the script I make, the longer the video will be, and the longer my team and I will have to spend working on the video, and the more depressed I'll get. So I've subconsciously gotten into the habit of writing shorter scripts that get to the point and cut out unnecessary and unfunny details. I feel like the American school system has brainwashed kids into thinking that the best way to express ideas is through the form of a 5-paragraph essay. Now, have you ever read a 5-paragraph essay that you wrote? They're boring as shit. And most schools require essays to have a minimum word count. So we are now training the next generation into purposely writing long-winded and wordy thoughts that could have been shortened down to a sentence. You've all written essays. You know all about repeating ideas you've already written, or saying the same thing over and over, or reiterating thoughts more than once, or echoing points an overabundant amount of times, or looking up words on thesaurus.com to hit that 500 minimum word count before. Well, you may not be ready to hear this, but you will not need to write 5-paragraph essays in your daily life. Shakespeare knew about this when in the 1300s he wrote, "Brevity is the soul of wit." Which is ironic, because he really liked to use a lot of unnecessary words. I once clicked on a video that was titled something like, "Top 10 Scary Things That Have Happened When Hiking" or something. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good video to watch at 3 in the morning. And I swear, the video started out like,
"Whether it's to have a healthier lifestyle or to see the great outdoors, hiking is a wonderful activity enjoyed by millions of people across the globe of America. But sometimes, this wonderful activity enjoyed by billions can sometimes turn deadly."
Why are you defining what a hike is? We all know! Just show me the blurry photos of Bigfoot already until I'm too scared to fall asleep! So, how do I come up with these video ideas? Well, I start by thinking, what can I rant about for hours? Something that makes me go, "Don't get me started on blank!" And then I do get started and I write those thoughts on a Google Doc. And sometimes my thoughts are jumbled and incoherent, like I've been up all night watching Bigfoot videos, but I don't care. I just need to get these thoughts out of my head and splattered onto a piece of paper. And sometimes just starting to write will make me think of new ideas and I go, "And another thing!" And I repeat that process until the script's done. And then when I'm done writing the script, it's actually not even close to being done. Once I've finished writing, I send the script off to some of my friends and the Amazing, and they look over it with the freshest of eyes, and they'll give me notes saying, "Hey, you misspelled percent here," or, "Hey, I have a joke you can add," or, "Hey, wait, James, I thought I was your friend." And then I'll choose which of their jokes is the funniest and that I'm going to steal. Here's a fun little YouTuber behind-the-scenes fact. Since 2018, there's a circle of friends I have where we all trade and read each other's scripts and make suggestions and pitch jokes. And once I'm done reading someone else's script, I get to watch their finished video a month or two or 8 months later and see if the jokes I pitched made the cut. And then I get to smile to myself because no one knows that I was the one who wrote that joke, because none of us credit each other, because none of us care. Literally, the last 30 seconds of my Suobway Part 4 video was written by this kid named Infamous Swoosh. I wrote in my script, "Conclusion goes here." And he just wrote one for me, and I went, "Yeah, I'll use that. And not credit you." But it's okay, because we all don't credit each other equally, so it's a win-win. Everyone in the friend circle gets to look funnier than they actually are. Some days, I'll stumble onto a topic that I just know I'm going to make a video about, and then the scripts are a breeze to write. But then there are some days where I'm content with the world and I got nothing that gets me started. But I can't just not make a script that month, otherwise what would I make a video about? Random thoughts? I still gotta put bread on the table, and also my team would be out of a job. So on those days, you're basically forcing yourself to be creative on demand, which is not the easiest thing to do. But fortunately, I have a few tricks to get the creative juices flowing. It's called drugs. I'm just kidding. It's called Adderall. Wait. Okay, but for real, I do have this really complicated technique to get ideas, so write these steps down, okay? What I do is I get a pen and a notebook, put on some lo-fi, and just write. About nothing specific, just whatever my brain thinks is important. I am writing right now, with my left hand. Most people are right-handed, but I am special and am left-handed. I'm glad my teachers didn't force me to be right-handed. They were more concerned about my messy handwriting and horrible spelling. Usually the ideas don't come that quickly, but you get what I'm talking about. So many times at conventions, I'll be on a panel and people will ask for advice about starting a YouTube channel, and everyone on the panel will say, "If you want to start a YouTube channel, you just gotta do it. You know, hit the upload button a couple of times." And I feel kind of bad for people who traveled far and wide to a convention and paid for a hotel and waited in line just to hear a bunch of YouTubers say, "You just gotta do it." And it sounds cliche, but it's true. We either say that or be more entertaining, and that's rude, so. Recently, I went on tour performing a live show called Scribble Showdown. I'll talk more about it in the next video, don't worry. And before every show, we had a Q&A panel, and the most frequent question we got asked was, "Can you read my screenplay, and how do you get motivation?" And the answer to that question is no, and you don't. You get disciplined. Discipline comes before motivation. If you have a project you want to start or a skill you want to learn, you can't wait around for motivation to hit. Sometimes it doesn't come. Instead, you have to set a schedule where you say, "Okay, on this day, from this time to this time, I'm going to put in the effort to achieve my goal." And if you don't know where to start, a good first step would be to just get your goals into writing. Get your thoughts out onto something physical. So grab a pen and a piece of paper and just ask your friends to read your screenplay, because I'm too busy. So busy that I didn't even have time to record an end card. This video is going to be a little more educational than usual. Okay, so there's this channel that I used to really like watching called Heart? And I say used to because she doesn't really post that often anymore. She makes videos that combine two of my favorite subjects, math and art.
You like math?
Yes, okay. I like math. So V Hart, I don't know her real name, made videos about math and triangles and transgenderism, and I'm going to be honest, I've kind of forgotten everything she's talked about. Hexa something, that was one of her things. But every year she's made anti-pi videos. Pi as in the math pie, remember? We're talking about math.
not the... Okay, so she posts them every year on Pi Day, which is today. It's Pi Day, if you didn't know that. Let me just tell you something interesting about Pi. In 1949, we started using computers to find Pi, and we kept getting closer and closer as technology advanced, and we never found the true value of Pi, to this day. All those Pi to a million places websites? Nope, not Pi. Yeah, we've gotten really, really close to Pi, and yet, we're nowhere near as close. Because it's infinite. But I mean, it's close enough where you physically can't measure that accurate in the real world. But it's not the true value of pi. The true value of pi goes on forever. And we haven't really gotten to the end of that. Okay, so back to V-Heart. There's a high chance she made a 2016 anti-pi video today, right now. So go check it out. Link in the description, if she's made one. So I guess this is a rebuttal video? About why pi is actually awesome? Oh, and I'm going to be rebutting her 2014 video because the 2015 one was kind of stupid.
Ah, March 14th. That's just an arbitrary number on a calendar we created. Yeah.
Man, shut up. And I actually wanted to make this video back in 2015, but I didn't. Instead, I just made this comic because last year was hashtag Ultimate Pi Day. So I've actually waited a year now, so I'm excited to talk about it. Let's do it. I hope I'm not breaking any copyright laws by
this Pi Day. I'm mad about how people worship pi for being infinite, for going on forever. First of all, pi is not infinite.
Well, yeah, it is. But that's not why it's awesome. Every number is technically infinite. You take the number 4 and you add a .0. The 4 is still the same, but in theory you can add a 0 forever, making it technically infinite. And that's just what pi is. It's just a number. It's not infinity. No one's saying that it is.
I know, it's not about its magnitude. It's about all those digits, infinite digits, going on forever. But first of all, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. That doesn't make it not awesome. It's right there on the number line between 3 and 4. It's just a number, like I said. Y equals pi is just a straight horizontal line. You take the derivative of pi, you get 0. It's a number. It's just a number, man. Just a number.
Pi is a number, not a process.
Yeah, okay, we agree. But that doesn't make it not awesome. The speed of light is just a number. It's about what that super specific number represents.
Secondly, yeah, so it's got infinite digits. So what? One-third has infinite digits.
Yeah, but pi is random numbers that go on forever. And there's no pattern. That's what's so cool. Do you know what the trillionth digit of pi is? No, no, you don't. It's random digits with no pattern. But I know the trillionth digit of one-third. Spoiler alert, it's 3.
There's exactly as many digits in one-third as in pi, as in 99.999 repeating.
Yeah, the digits of pi are random, but the number as a whole isn't random at all, which is another cool thing. It is the ratio of the diameter of a circle to its circumference. Multiply the diameter by pi, you get the circumference. Are you forgetting that?
There's an infinite number of rational numbers. For any two fractions, you can find another fraction that's between them again and again and again. There's never any fractions that are right next to each other on the number line.
Yes, irrational numbers are technically everywhere. Take the 1 millionth digit of pi, change it to a 3, and you get an entirely new irrational number. It's not pi anymore. I mean, this was never pi to begin with, but you can't use this to get the circumference anymore. Nuh-uh, not good. But it's this highly specific irrational number that this special ratio occurs. Not this one, not this one, this one. It's why we made this specific irrational number its own symbol. Well, okay, we actually used a Greek letter, so it's not totally made up.
So I don't know why anyone would make a fuss about the grand infinities and forevers of a boring little number like pi.
It's not boring.
The only thing even a little weird about pi is that you do get an irrational number by taking such a simple ratio of such a simple geometric object.
Yes, thank you. It's so weird, right?
Surely that never happens with other simple ratios of other simple geometric objects. Oh, wait, they're in everything.
What? No, okay. If you take one of the sides of a square and multiply it by this number, you get the length of its diagonal between the corners. Okay, so this is the ratio of the side of a square and its diagonal, and it's just random numbers that go on forever. Kinda like pi. So why don't we celebrate this number? Why don't we have a special symbol for it like pi? Well, actually we do. It's called radical 2. Look, you just take this number, you square it, you get 2. Just plain old boring 2. That's not special. You can't square pi and get something like 10. You square pi, it's still irrational. Look at this triangle. Same deal, right? This number goes on forever. But wait, it can be written down as radical 3 over 2, just like what you did in the video. Now this one for a pentagon, we do use a symbol for it. It's a Greek symbol called phi. Phi? Phi? That's really close to pi.
I wonder if that's on purpose. Now, phi is approximately this number. Kind of like pi, right? Totally 100%ly irrational. I think we got ourselves another pi, but wait! We can rewrite it like this! Hey, side note, this number is considered the golden ratio, and it has to do when we talk about that swirly, like, seashell thing. And it can actually be found in art, so that's pretty cool. Okay, back to pi. You can't rewrite pi like any of these numbers. Pi is its own number. It stands by itself above the rest. It's not radical 2, not rad 3 over 2, but just plain old 3.1415. That's why pi is so awesome. There's a picture going around on the internet that's like, pi contains the day you were born and the day you'll die. We give the numbers, the letters, every possible conversation you ever had, and every conversation you didn't have. You see, now that's just stupid. That's just the nature of having random numbers go on forever. I could do the same thing on randomgenerator.org if I just generated a random digit forever. Now what does this mean? Do circles even exist? How can you have a bendy line with just straight lines? What is real? Alright, so just to finish things up, this is all bullcrap. Well, not all of it. Well, yeah, all of it. The reason why pi is actually famous and so beloved is because, let's be real, guys. It's called pi. You don't see people celebrating Pi Day because they appreciate how this irrational number is the ratio between the diameter and its circumference. They're celebrating it because it's called pi. And I think that's what happened to pi. People were like, this boring math term has a funny name. Let's celebrate it on our meaningless calendars.
For some reason, everybody thinks butterflies are better than moths. We make children's books about butterflies, we use them as metaphors of change. You might be an ugly caterpillar now, but soon you'll grow into a beautiful butterfly. We go into fields and frolic around trying to catch them, and some people even have a collection of them. Granted, the people who do collect them do so by impaling the butterflies, but whatever, it's still a compliment. How many other insects can say that they get this much affection? Maybe praying mantises. Where I come from, every time you see a praying mantis, you have to point it out like, "Whoa, guys, look, a praying mantis!" And then you just look at it. Anyway, back to the point. Moths, on the other hand, are like the white trash versions of butterflies. Even though moths and butterflies are practically the same creature, for some reason we give moths a bad rap. We laugh at them for flying into light bulbs. Butterflies would do that too if they want to sleep at night. Moths are so attracted to bright light that they'll follow it even if it kills them. You might think that this sort of behavior makes them stupid, but I like to think that this just shows how dedicated they can be. We also get mad at moths for eating our clothes, but if butterflies like the taste of our clothing, they wouldn't hesitate to chomp down on our laundry. Actually, butterflies probably think that they're too good for your clothing. They only eat the fine things in life, like flowers. You hear that? Butterflies think they're too good for your t-shirts. In Arizona, we have your normal run-of-the-mill moths. You know the type, small, gray. They look like a paper airplane made by someone who didn't know how to make a paper airplane. But we also have a moth called the white-lined sphinx moth. And these moths are like the Godzilla of the moth world. Which, actually, I'm pretty sure there is a giant moth in the Godzilla world. Mothra. This again just shows how much we don't like moths. We turn them into city-destroying monsters. When will the hate end? I'm sure when they filmed Mothra's scenes in the Godzilla movie, they didn't even use any special effects. They just used a normal white-lined sphinx moth. Those things could beat up hummingbirds if they wanted. One night when I was 5 years old, one of these big boys was hanging around at our porch light, cause, you know, moths, they just love themselves some glowing balls of heat. And then when someone opened the door, the moth saw all the other light inside and just flew straight in. More light?! This place is absolutely glimmering!
Its fate was sealed as soon as it crossed over the threshold.
I don't know what the moth did once he was inside our house, but whatever it was, it sure tired him out. Because the next morning, my sister and I found him on the kitchen windowsill just lying there, doing absolutely nothing. He was probably thinking about the outside world and being with his moth brethren, but he'd pretty much given up trying to escape. Because me and my sister just scooped him up and put him into a jar, and he became our new pet. My sister decided to name him Harry. Now, some moths are actually quite hairy, but this moth wasn't hairy at all. So that name didn't make any sense, but we were five, so it didn't have to.
Hey guys, don't get too attached to Harry.
We poked holes in the lid, we put leaves and sticks in his jar, which might have been a good idea if he was still a caterpillar, but I don't think moths eat leaves. Do they eat leaves? We probably should have just put in a t-shirt. We thought we were taking good care of him. My mom apparently didn't like Harry. She said, "I have a good idea. Why don't you take Harry to your kindergarten class tomorrow and, I don't know, maybe he can be the class pet there." This is back when I thought my mom had good ideas, So we decided to take Harry to school, because think of how cool you would be as a 5-year-old showing all your classmates the giant moth you captured. Looking back at the situation, having a class pet whose lifespan that won't make it to the end of the school year isn't a smart idea. The teacher probably didn't want to have to come to school one day and explain to a room full of 5-year-olds why the class pet was lying on its back and not moving. So the teacher suggested, what if we release Harry at recess? Now, a lot of kids' movies that have animals in them, the animals usually don't like being captured. The animals want to be free and live out in the wild. Think Finding Nemo, Spirit, Happy Feet, Free Willy. It was common knowledge to every 5-year-old that all the creatures walking on this green earth wanted to live in the wild. So we were more than happy to put Harry back in his home. When it came time for recess, we all walked outside and were excited to be part of the newly instituted Catch and Release Moth Program. We were like those people who put beached whales back in the ocean. Except, in this metaphor, the whale was already in the ocean minding its own business, and then two dumb kindergartners put it in a plastic baggie and then moved it miles away from its home. It was supposed to be a happy moment seeing Harry get rehabilitated into moth society. But what actually happened was a lot darker. We gathered around the teacher, she opened the jar, but Harry didn't fly out, so then she had to shake Harry out of the jar. We've already established that Harry isn't that smart. Eventually, he finally understood that he was free. The whole sky was waiting above him. He flew upward, wings fluttering, ready to reclaim his moth life. Well, turns out there's a good reason giant moths only come out at night. And that's mostly because of camouflage and the fact that their predators are asleep. Harry had neither of those advantages at our playground in the middle of the day. Not 10 seconds had gone by when a bird from a nearby tree swooped down and grabbed Harry in its beak. Harry was a free moth for a good 10 seconds before his painful, inevitable death. Immediately, the entire kindergarten class began screaming. My sister ran after the bird, demanding that he released Harry. Unfortunately, birds don't listen to those sorts of demands. Am I right, Jaden?
Ari, sit. Ari, roll over. Ari, stay. No. Speak.
So then the teacher had to give us the talk about how nature is a lot scarier than it is in the movies. Basically, the circle of life involves a lot of death. But on the bright side, we totally made that bird's day. He was just sitting in a tree, probably wishing Arizona had more worms, and then boom, free meal. I wonder what I'm going to eat. Whack. For all we know, that could have been the bird's first time eating a moth. I'm sure that bird told all of his bird friends and they totally didn't believe him. Dude, I just caught a moth. Like one of the big ones, yeah. I know they're nocturnal, but it was just flying around in the middle of the day. No, I'm telling the truth. Dude, there were like 30 children who all saw me. Ask any one of them and they'll tell you I caught that moth. I don't remember what happened for the rest of the day during school, but I'm pretty sure we didn't get much done. When we got home, me and my sister tearfully told my mom about how Harry had met his doom. My mom said that she was trying not to cry, but I think she was lying. I don't think she was as emotionally attached to Harry as we were. Harry was only a part of our lives for a couple of hours, but years have passed and me and my sister still talk about Harry. Just randomly in conversation, one of us will ask, "Hey, do you remember Harry?"
Yeah.
And now a random moth that died 15 years ago will be remembered forever in our hearts. If only Harry was alive to see what he would have become. I want to share with you some pictures I've saved in Harry's scrapbook. Here are Harry's baby pictures. Here's Harry's first apartment. And here's the last thing Harry ever saw.
Hey there, Frederick. What you doing? Oh, hello, brother of mine. Why, I'm just studying for a math test tomorrow. That's pretty neat, Frederick. Braxton, brother. Shouldn't you also be studying for the test? Well, you see, Frederick, due to my high levels of apathy and the stress of knowing that I'll never be good at math, I've decided to completely give up on even trying to do good on the test. So, what are you gonna do instead? Oh, I'm just gonna go watch some YouTube videos. School sucks! Especially math! Ugh! When will I ever use geometry / trigonometry / calculus in the real world? I think you're only saying that because you're bad at geometry / trigonometry / calculus. Why is everyone so quick to hate on math? Math is easy. How many essays did you have to write for math class? Oh, that's right. E to the I pi plus 1. Which is 0. One thing I would change about math class is I think it's dumb that you have to show your work. Ugh! Do you know how much harder it is to cheat when you have to show your work? Dear math, solve your own problems, tweeted MatPat. I hate Matt, replied Protato Gamer. Hey, that's not very nice of you, Prote. All he did was tweet about math. Maybe what you really hate is spelling.
Or maybe you really do hate MatPat.
Well, two can play at this game. When will I ever need to know about the themes and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird when I go into the real world? That's right, never! You don't need to know anything to be in the real world.
Okay, I think we can all agree that a lot of what school teaches you isn't that important.
And there's definitely more important things schools could be teaching you, like taxes or how to pick a good president. But I'm not the one who makes the curriculum, so why am I even talking about it?
Regardless of how broken your education system is, you should always stay in school, kids. Right, Dave?
I was a good student in school, not counting college. And look how I turned out. I'm not using everything I learned in school almost every day. Sure, you'll probably never need to know that much about Shakespeare's plays. But hey, now you know how to read old-timey complicated books. And no, you'll probably never have to find the area under a curve ever. But now you can say that you can. And isn't that what life's all about? So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my school stories.
What do you mean Jaden already made a video on school stories?
Did she call them school stories? I already stole from her like 2 videos ago. Okay, just, I'll think of something. So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my academy anecdotes. So you know how guys can pee standing up? It's amazing. Ladies, if you've never peed standing up, then you're missing out. But there are some rules that apply with having the superpower. Like, don't go to a urinal right next to another guy unless it's absolutely necessary. Or, if the urinals don't have a divider, then everyone can all agree to keep your eyes and mind straight. These rules have been taught to us at a very young age. By the time we were in elementary school, we were all pros at peeing. Except for some of us when we were asleep. But that's not important. So at this point in life, we all should have known what we were doing. But there is this one kid who I guess no one ever taught him how to pee correctly. This kid, I'm not going to say his race because it doesn't matter, but when he went to the bathroom, he would pull his pants and underwear all the way down to the ground. Some of the ladies watching this might be thinking, wait, is that not how guys pee? Ladies, you'll just have to trust me on this, but that is the most wrong way a person can pee. The first time I saw the kid doing this was when I was in the urinal right next to him. Pee faster!
As us two bros were peeing, a third bro walked into the bathroom, saw this kid's bottom, and just went, ooh, and walked out of the bathroom. I wish I could have done the same.
How do you tell someone, hey man, when you pee like that, everyone can see your butt. So just,
here, let me show you how to do it.
I don't know what happened to that kid, but I think he would agree with me that math is easy. He was Asian.
When I was little, I had a very weird sense of humor. So in the 5th grade, there was this girl I'd known for a long time. We weren't strangers or anything. And one day I said to her, you have 2 big blue zits right there. And I pointed at her eyes. I was talking about her eyes. I called her eyes zits. Get it?
She, immediately slapped me. Probably because the joke was so awful.
And that was the first time I ever got slapped by someone who wasn't a family member. And yes, it was Priscilla, the girl I sat next to in the cardboard boat video.
She claims that the slap was an accident and that she was just trying to fake slap me to scare me. But I think she was really just self-conscious about her eyesits.
One time, my 6th grade teacher, who was the same height as all of us, threw a stapler across the room because we wouldn't stop talking.
Here's an anecdote about the first time I got detention, and it isn't that exciting. I was in the 7th grade and our class was at a computer lab. And the kid sitting next to me, his race doesn't matter, so I'm not going to say it, Asian, kept changing the computer wallpapers to cats and he kept showing me. To be fair, I thought what he was doing was hilarious. Then I asked him, can you change the background to Chuck Norris?
That just goes to show you how long ago this story took place.
He showed me what he did, I laughed, but then the teacher said, who's changing the wallpapers? She was able to see everyone's screens from her computer, and the kid said,
me and James were.
Dude, don't bring me into this! You were the one changing the wallpapers. I mean, I was involved a little, but don't drag me down with you.
We ended up getting detention, except my school didn't call it detention. They called it CARE, which I'm sure was an acronym for something. If it wasn't an acronym, that would have been a weird thing to call detention.
Let's just say it stood for kids are really extra.
The whole time I was in CARE, I kept thinking in my head, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. If they see you cry, you might as well move to China. And that was the only time I got detention. Except it wasn't called detention. So I still have a clean record. All right, here's the last anecdote. This one happened when I was in the 11th grade. I was in an AP US history class, and I had it for a 0 hour. So that meant I was at the class before school even started, and I was way too tired to learn about presidents. I was sitting in class when all of a sudden I sneezed very loudly. And it was an above average sneeze, like one of those sneezes where you had to lean into it. And after I sneezed, this kid near me said, "Hey yo, Mr. Teacher, can we get some tissues? This boy's got a bloody nose." And I thought, oh shoot, I do? Well, that sneeze was pretty violent, and I did pick my nose a few minutes ago. And then the teacher looked right at me and said, "Oh yeah, you can just go to the bathroom." So I got up, and as I was walking to the door, I felt my face and realized, wait a minute, I don't have a bloody nose. I turned around, and there was a kid who actually did have a bloody nose walking towards me. I'm not gonna say the race of the kid because it doesn't matter. Canadian, but I was in a pretty awkward situation. So I punched myself until I actually did get a bloody nose. Nah, I'm just kidding. What I really did was I said out loud, "I have to go to the bathroom too." And then I left. I didn't really have to go to the bathroom. I didn't want to see another exposed butt anyway, so I just waited outside awkwardly for a long time. I got an A in that class, by the way, if you were wondering. I still don't use anything I learned in that class.
I'm sort of stealing this idea from Jaden Animations. Wait, no, that's not right. I'm not stealing it. I'm plagiarizing it. Jaden did a video talking about random thoughts she had, and you should all go watch it. And I thought, hey, I think randomly sometimes. So Jaden, is it alright if I make a video about my random thoughts? I hope you say yes, because I just did. What is happiness? Well, it's a chemical in your brain. And how do you get that chemical? Well, it's just a little something I like to call drugs. I think humans make fun of hairless animals way too much. We think that all hairless animals are ugly. Just go to Google Images and type in hairless animal, and you'll probably think the animals you see there are ugly as well. But we all seem to forget that we're hairless animals too. If anything, other animals should think that we're ugly. So I look at this phenomenon and I have a theory. I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry. My dad never taught me how to shave, and one time I cut myself shaving right above my lip, and for the rest of the day, all I could smell was blood. I don't know why I mentioned the dad part. You know how websites will ask you to type in a bunch of misshapen letters to make sure you're not a robot? That's called a CAPTCHA. And some of those CAPTCHAs are impossible. Sometimes I look at a CAPTCHA and think, am I a robot? I just wanted to send some email. I didn't want to question my identity. I wasn't ready for an existential crisis, Club Penguin. Sorry, that joke is dead. Just like Club Penguin. So here's the random thought. What if we lived in a robot society and robots had to prove that they weren't human to make a Facebook account? I think their CAPTCHA would be an optical illusion. Like, to sign into a website, it'll show two lines and say, "Prove you're not a human, which line is bigger?" Optical illusions are like CAPTCHAs for people. Every time you paint a room, it gets a little bit smaller. And if it takes you one can of paint to paint an entire room, then the room gets smaller by one can of paint. You brought a can of paint inside the room, and you never took it out. Every time you smell something, molecules from that thing get sucked up into your nose, and that's how you're able to smell it. So that means every time you smell something, it gets a tiny bit lighter. Do archaeologists have lingo and jokes that only other archaeologists will understand? Like, there's a whole other world of jokes that I won't get to experience because I'm not an archaeologist. Like, one day, two archaeologists could be digging a hole, and one says, "I'm not finding anything!" And then the other guy says, "Well, you know what they say in the archaeology business." And I don't know what they say because I'm not an archaeologist. How about we look up jokes for archaeologists? Why did Robin Hood pull out of the archery contest? He found it an arrowing experience. Okay, get that one? It just wasn't that funny. Nor was it about archaeology. Or maybe it was, and I just don't get it. We'll never know. Where did Caesar keep his armies? Up his sleeveys. Okay, I had to get this one explained to me, but armies is supposed to be your arm, like your body arm, and your armies go up your sleeveys. Get it? Except Julius Caesar wore a toga, so he didn't even have sleeves. And you could just say this about anyone who had an army. Where did Hitler keep his armies? Up his sleeveys! Ha ha ha! When you ask someone what time it is, sometimes they'll say, "It's a quarter to blank." And first off, I really hate that way of telling time, because now I have to use math just to know what time it is. Someone will say, "It's a quarter to eight." Okay, so a quarter to eight, well, a quarter is 25, so 8 minus 25, it's like negative 13. Wait, no, we're using time numbers, so a quarter of 60, that's like 10 minutes, so 8 minus 60 over 4, you carry the 2, and... oh, it's 8 o'clock now. We usually only say it's a quarter to when referring to whole numbers, but I wish people would use other times, like, hey, what time is it? Oh, it's a quarter to 8:37. Did you know that mosquitoes prefer type O blood more than any other blood type? Does that mean our blood tastes different? How can mosquitoes sense what blood type we are? Do mosquitoes think we come in different flavors? What if there was a restaurant for mosquitoes and the menus just had our blood types? Are there mosquito snobs? Like one mosquito would say, oh, I see you're drinking O negative. Of course you'd like that blood. Everyone likes that blood. I got that whole idea from a conversation I had with Jaden, and I said I was going to use it in my Random Thoughts video, so I'm just stealing everything from Jaden.
You know what I think would be a funny contradiction? A fedora with a Tumblr logo on it.
Whenever you leave for a trip, people will say, drive safe, which is fine. I always appreciate safe driving tips. But when you go flying in an airplane, sometimes people will say, have a safe flight. But I literally have no control if a plane flies safely or not. Why are you telling me to fly safe? I should be the one telling the pilot that. Hey, I just wanted to say that a lot of my friends are counting on you, so you better not screw this up. I appreciate the sentiment, but how do I fly unsafe? Maybe go on my phone before we take off, not watch the safety video? Blow the plane up? Why do people care so much about fashion? If I bought some really nice clothes and I go to a party, out of everyone in that room, I'm the only one who can't see what I'm wearing, unless I look down the entire time. I can go to a party and be wearing just a bunch of clown makeup, and as long as there's no mirrors around and everyone plays it cool, I would have no idea that I'm wearing anything. And also, it doesn't matter what I'm wearing, because I look good in everything. I think this whole YouTube thing has given me a confidence boost. I wouldn't say it's an unhealthy amount, but it's given me confidence that I didn't have in high school. My parents bought me a Pokemon shirt for Christmas, and yeah, I like Pokemon, but I don't want the whole world to know that. And in high school, I wouldn't have worn any remotely geeky shirt. But now I can go outside and not even realize that I'm wearing my Pokemon shirt. And when I do realize, I usually think, huh, that's embarrassing. I'm the odd ones out, who cares? When my parents were my age, they already had a child. And here I am, wearing a Pokemon shirt. You know how different states in America will have different names for certain things? Like some states call it pop instead of soda, or how they call it a washroom instead of a bathroom, and apparently in Rhode Island they call a water fountain a bubbler, and everywhere else is just normal. Anyway, once I heard that down south, there's a phrase for when it's raining and the sun is still out. And that phrase is, the devil meeting his wife. Oh, isn't that so sweet? That means anyone can find happiness, even the devil. I love it when we give the devil more innocent and human characteristics. And given how few of times it rains in Arizona, I don't get to use that phrase very often. So already when it's raining, it's like, woo, it's raining, this day is gonna be great! But then when the sun's out, I get to say, look guys, the devil's meeting his wife! I hope they're happy together. Unfortunately, I misheard what that phrase was when I learned it. It's not the devil meeting his wife. It's actually the devil beating his wife. So I guess they're not happy together. I was so sad when I learned what it actually was. I don't know who this devil's wife is, but you need to find a new man, dude. And to think, I almost thought of you as an alright guy, Satan. I looked up that saying on Wikipedia, and in Tennessee they say, the devil is kissing his wife. So I guess in Tennessee, the devil's romantic, but everywhere else he just can't stand her. And the worst variation I could find has to be what they say in France. In France, when it rains and the sun's out, they say, the devil is beating his wife and marrying his daughter. Whoa, France! I'd expect that sort of behavior from Tennessee, but not you, France! Why do you have to be so dramatic to describe your weather? I don't want to even know what you call snowstorms. So anyway, those were my random thoughts. I swear I don't do drugs.
So like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do.
So immediately after posting the Garfield video, which, if for whatever reason you haven't seen, you should go watch it, I had a bunch of people try and figure out what the second Garfield comic was. And you guys got it almost immediately, like within minutes. I saw a bunch of other comments out there that had the right explanation, but it was the user Solo McCraft's comment that I saw first, and it was the most upvoted. Some people probably spent a good 10 minutes typing out all these explanations. I'm sorry, but this guy was first. So after trying to figure out how to message him on YouTube, I asked if he had a Twitter. He said he did, and we talked there.
You got a PayPal?
No, I'm only 15.
Crap.
So we decided that I would pay him via a Steam gift card. I just wanted to mention that and say that I was true to my promise of $23. Except Steam only has $20 gift cards, so I guess $3 is still on the table. So now, what you've all been waiting for, let me explain what this comic was trying to do. So that is a teeth brush, and that is teeth paste, and that is John walking up to it, and okay, you know how adults and dentists tell kids that the amount of toothpaste you should put on a toothbrush should be the size of a pea? Well, that's what John was trying to say. They say you should use the amount of toothpaste that is similar to the size of a pea. See, this word pea is supposed to be the pea as in the vegetable pea. I think that's what threw me off the most, is because I kept thinking that this was a potty joke. Then John is going to brush his teeth, and he says, "Garfield, that's not pea-sized." And he says this because Garfield is holding a teeth brush with a mountain of teeth paste. I thought this was like a spray or something. And then Garfield says, "Yes, it is, because the teeth paste is pea-sized because he has a massive pea. That's why it's green. This is a pea as in the vegetable." I don't know why it's not round, though. But I get the comic now! That was stupid. I just want to talk about this comment on the video I saw. "That's not Garfield. That's your own original character. Garfield!" And I really like that. And he's drawn like this. Ah, I love it. See, that's Garfield, and this is Garfield. And okay, there were a couple of people who redrew the comic and sent it to me. And it's funny because some of them, I don't think they knew what was happening either. So I'm just going to read some of the comics that people sent to me. So these three comics right here, they were actually correct. They got it right. I like how this one says, "Not as excited." There's a toothbrush, and then John's walking up to the toothbrush. And they basically all say the same thing. They say you should use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste. And then he's going to go brush his teeth. And I like how this one has a massive toothbrush. And then they all go, "Garfield, that's not pea-sized." And then you see Garfield with the mountain of toothpaste. And he's like, "Yes, it is," because he has another pea. I like this one because it's like actually round. And all the rest didn't get it right. And this one, I really like the facial expressions. There's like, he's walking up and he says, "They say you should use the really big toothpaste." He's about to go, and he's, "Garfield, that's not paste." And then he's, "Yes, it is." Oh, I love it. This one, it feels like a computer should be reading this one.
"Here is the bathroom, where the comic will take place. John walks in looking awake as ever. They said to always brush your teeth with toothpaste. He talks about what his dentist said. He gets his, IDK. Garfield, that's not a piece." Garfield interrupts him by doing, "Listen." He basically pulls up the water pipe and water goes everywhere. John is upset. Then Garfield pulls up the sewage drain as well, so there is gross liquid everywhere. John is scared now. Garfield explains it all in one sentence. "Yes, it is."
Good job, man. This one, I love the creative take on it. First, it's called garnish. And then John comes in. "They say you should use the big toothbrush to remove all your last night mistakes." And then he has another giant toothbrush. "Garfunkel, that's not a toothbrush." "I know, John, it's a crack pipe." "Well, life has no real meaning anyway." Ah, that was great. I like how he took what this was supposed to be a toothbrush and made it look like a crack pipe. And to be honest, it looks more like a crack pipe than a toothbrush. So good job. And this one was made like 20 minutes after I posted the video. It was drawn super fast. And I like how they drew Garfield. How I drew Garfield. So he goes, "Garfield, that's not pieces." Translation, "That's not your toothbrush." He takes it. And then translation, "To fight John for toothbrush ownership, Garfield unleashes his secret power." "Yes, it is." His secret power is being able to control a green slime. So this next one was drawn by a comic friend of mine. He makes a comic called Doggy Bag. He's on Tumblr and iFunny. I actually collabed and made a comic with him before. So this one is actually a remake of the Fire comic. And I just love all the attention to detail in this one. It starts by saying, "By James R., age 6, illustrated by Doggy Bag," and has our Twitter, and he calls it Garfield. And so we see John saying, "Happy birthday," and then, "Wah," and then firefighters go, "Where's the fire?" And then John goes, "My cat just having a B-day." I like how the cake is falling apart. The beep, beep, and the first beep looks funny, like how it was in the first one. And John goes, "Oh no. For some reason, I just love how lifeless Garfield looks in this comic. So anyway, those were all the comics. Sorry if I missed any. Thanks for watching. We're not going to do an end card, and I'll see you next time. Mwah. No, I'm not going to do the mwah this time. I understand that there are things that I don't understand. For example, theoretical physics, or how to make friends. But I do know that the world is not flat, that vaccines work, and listening to people tell me otherwise is admittedly a guilty pleasure of mine. Whether it's conspiracy theories or horoscopes, I love watching people pour their heart into something they genuinely believe in, only for me to go, "I disagree." But please, continue. There are some beliefs that I don't agree with, but are absolutely fine to believe in, like thinking bucket hats look good on someone. But I think we can all agree that some beliefs can be incredibly damaging to a person, or even humanity as a whole, like the anti-vaxxers, or racists. So I discovered a new trend, and I'm not sure if it's just kids being kids, or a mentally damaging belief system, but I'm still gonna talk about it and explain to my audience the importance of critical thinking and to notice the red flags and dangerous beliefs. So what am I talking about? I unfortunately fell down a rabbit hole and discovered a community of mostly kids on a phone application called TikTok doing something called reality shifting. This, by the way, is not a small community of like 20 people. There are amino groups with thousands of members, videos with hundreds of thousands of views, and they have their own acronyms. OMG. Reality shifting stems from the belief in parallel universes, which, I gotta be honest, I'm not completely sold on that idea to begin with. You say that Schrodinger's cat is both alive and dead, but cats have 9 lives, so are 4.5 cats dead? How is a cat half dead? Either way, someone supposedly very smart has said that every decision you've ever made has caused the universe to copy itself and create a new reality where you made the different decision. I had cereal for breakfast this morning, but somewhere there's a reality where I ate my hamster for breakfast. Does that mean I create a new universe every time I scratch my butt, and somewhere there's a James with better manners? So times that by 8 billion people making decisions every day, plus the decisions made by, like, dogs and jellyfish, right? Those count, I think. And we get roughly infinity total realities. If you've seen Endgame, you know what I'm talking about. The reality shifting community says that since there are infinite realities, then there's a reality where GameStop stock is incredibly low, or that COVID didn't happen. Or perhaps there's even a reality out there where Hogwarts is real, and a messenger owl just dropped off your acceptance letter. And through the right meditation, you can transfer your consciousness from your current reality, your CR for short, to your Hogwarts desired reality, your DR. And for some gosh darn reason, Hogwarts is the number one shiftable destination location. But obviously, it's not just Hogwarts. Any fictional universe is fair game. You could go to the Hunger Games or Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure why, though. A lot of bad things happen there. And since all logic is thrown out the window, cartoon and anime realities are shiftable destinations. Because if Schrodinger's cat taught us anything, it's that there are some universes that are just 24 drawings a second. So because there are allegedly infinite realities, people will write down what they want their desired reality to be, and this is called a script. It's funny, you know, normally scripts are made to tell fictional stories, but these people think that what they write down will be 100% real. And you can make a script of whatever you want. You can say, "I want to shift to Hogwarts and be in a relationship with Draco Malfoy." I mean, not me, this is just an example. Now listen, you're a smart kid, okay? Hopefully, I don't have to explain to you that that's not how life works. If you believe you can hop into different realities, then that's great and I see no problem with it. Is what I would say in a different reality, but in this reality, I have a lot of questions. If you can shift your consciousness into a different version of you, what happens to the alternate reality you's consciousness? You're just taking over someone else's body. This other you had a life and a family, unless you're going to a YA fantasy novel, and you just took over their whole body. What if there's a you in an alternate reality that's like, "I want to live in a reality where there's a pandemic and I'm sadder," and then they shifted here? What happens to your consciousness? You don't trade. The reality shifting community says that when you shift, you leave behind a clone of yourself. Obviously. So when you shift, there's someone's consciousness unaccounted for. What about the realities where one of you had waffles for breakfast and the other had pancakes? Both of these yous are pretty much the exact same, so then both of you will want to reality shift to the exact same Harry Potter reality. Do you have to share a body with the other yous that have shifted to the same reality? Are you telling me that Voldemort and any fictional villain is real? How come half of us didn't get turned to dust when Thanos snapped? If anyone can reality shift, are you telling me there's a chance that Voldemort could download TikTok and reality shift here? If you go to Hogwarts, you're leading Voldemort right to us. How can there be a reality where magic is real? Sure, I don't know how parallel universes work, but they're parallel, so the laws of physics should still be the same, right?
But James, I know that reality shifting makes no sense and is impossible, but then why do so many people claim to have shifted?
Because they're dreaming. Shifting happens when you fall asleep, and if you fill your subconscious with things from your desired reality, would you be surprised that you had a dream about Hogwarts? Something about this trend doesn't sit right with me. A lot of the reality shifting TikToks were done by kids, and kids, as you know, can get really obsessed in the fandom and do some cringy stuff. If these kids were making fanfiction and writing themselves on a date with Bakugo, that would be totally fine. Healthy even. Heck, even if these kids flat out said, "I love Harry Potter so much that I want to manipulate my dreams to be about him," that would be fine too! But something about actually believing that you're astral projecting into a fictional universe? I don't know, that level of obsession just feels unhealthy, my guy. And also, back off Bakugo, he's mine. The problem with reality shifting and actually conspiracy theories as a whole is that they pretend to be based on factual evidence when they're entirely a pseudoscience. You start off with a scientific idea, multiple realities, and then you make up whatever you want and use what the scientists have said about multiple realities as proof. Even though no scientist has said anything about being able to move your consciousness outside of your body, or that you leave a clone of yourself behind when you reality shift, or that cartoon universes exist. I've seen people in videos say that they've done research on reality shifting, but I feel confident in saying you didn't get a degree in quantum physics. I want you to cite your sources and show me the studies, because research isn't just believing what other people said on TikTok. These TikToks get impressionable kids to believe in reality shifting in pretty manipulative ways, saying that if you didn't shift, it's because you didn't believe hard enough. When you get these doubts and say, "Oh, I can't shift, I don't even know if it's real anymore at this point," try and ask yourself after, "But what if it's real? What if I can shift? You want to find out, do you?" I get it. Harry Potter is a cool world. That's why they made a whole theme park about it. Who wouldn't want to drop out of a Muggle public school and live in a castle with a bunch of soft British boys? And also magic or whatever. But you need to be mindful about where you're getting your information. I've watched hours of flat earthers and anti-vaxxers talk about their beliefs, and these people get their information from non-credible sources, and they end up pushing more fake information online, and it creates this echo chamber that warps their worldview. I don't want kids watching these TikToks or going on Amino and essentially get lied to and think this is how the world works. I'm hoping that all of these people will look back at themselves in 10 years and go, "Yeesh, I can't believe I was so obsessed about a thing, I literally tried to astral project myself across the multiverse. Right, Bakugo?" I know that this reality can suck sometimes, and right now it's looking pretty bad. But like it or not, this is the one reality we get. A lot of things may be out of your control, but according to theoretical physics, we make a lot of choices. And all our choices lead us down different paths. So what you need to do is not give up on this reality for a literal fictitious one, but instead to make choices that will make this current reality your desired reality. Thank you all for coming to my TED Talk.
I think that everyone at some point in their life should work in a fast food or retail job. Not to improve their work ethic or anything, but so that everyone knows what it's like to have that kind of job. They wouldn't work in fast food their whole lives, maybe just like for 6 months, just so they get a feel for it. So with that, let's talk about the time when I worked in fast food. I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. Our spokesperson was in the news recently. I don't know if you guys look at the news. Did you hear he got beat up in jail? I kind of want to meet the person who beat up Jared more than Jared. Not in person. We wouldn't meet in person, obviously. But, like, he would be behind bars, and I would just look at the guy who beat up my spokesperson.
How many people get to say that they beat up a fast food icon who is also a pedophile?
Only one, and it's that guy. Okay, but seriously, guys, working at Subway was probably one of the most easiest jobs out there. I don't know why I'm about to complain about it to you guys. We got free cookies. And you know the comic with the Subways in Hell? I was actually working at Subway when I made that comic. I just think it adds sort of a little bit of value to it. You see, the owners, who are husband and wife, can you believe it, of the Subway I worked at owned two stores. One of the Subway stores was in a Walmart on an Indian reservation, because we have those in Arizona, and the other Subway was the Subway I worked at. And since the Walmart store was always busy, the owners would spend 99% of their time at that store. So I didn't really have a boss most of the time. On the off chance the owners did show up, they would just pick up some food and then they would make sure I was making sandwiches the right way. And every time I made a sandwich in front of them, they would always find something wrong with it, without fail. You put on too many olives. Do you know according to the Subway formula, you're only supposed to put on 8 olives on a foot long? 8! One for every other bite. That's just ridiculous. Can you imagine someone just counting out 8 olives? Nobody does that. I usually worked the closing shift, and at the end of the night, we would turn the alarm and we have 60 seconds to get out of the store. But one time I had the opening shift, so I unlocked the door to get in with my key, and the alarm went beep, beep. Meaning I had 60 seconds to turn it off. No big deal, right? I've turned the alarm on all the time when I was closing. So I go to the little control panel, and I type in the code, and nothing happens. The beeping is still there, and the clock is still ticking down. So I go, okay, I'm going to press each button very carefully. I'm going to make sure each button makes a beep when I press it. Beep, beep, beep. Nothing still happens. So I go, okay, I'm going to make sure to press each button very carefully. And I start thinking, did they change the passcode without telling me? Well, this is the only passcode I know, so we're just going to try it again. And I press each button very carefully. Beep. 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 And it goes quiet. And then the alarm goes off. I still had like 20 seconds left. But I guess when you get it wrong 3 times, it automatically assumes that you're a burglar. So while the alarm is going off, I look on the contact sheet for the owner's cell phone number. I step outside, I call him, and he doesn't pick up. So I go back inside, find the number for the other Subway store. They open an hour before we do. Someone picks up with their stupid voice. Oh, thank you for calling Subway. I'm blah, 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 blah. How may I help you? And I go, hey, is Mike there? That's not his real name, guys. Don't worry. And they go, just a minute. Yeah, sure. I have all the time in the world. The cops might be on their way, but take your time. So, Mike picks up. Yellow. Hey, Mike, this is James. What's the passcode for the alarm? Who is this? It's James. What's the passcode? What are you doing there, James? Why aren't you answering the question? I have the opening shift. Is the alarm going off? Yeah, no one told me the new code. Yeah, we changed it. It's the last 4 digits of your social security number. Oh, okay, thanks, Mike. I don't know my social security number. So I finally get the alarm off. No one showed up, thankfully. Which, I actually don't know if that's a good thing or not, now that I say it out loud. We did have a store manager who would, like, make the schedule and sometimes tell us, hey, can you guys do a better job at your job? But other than that, she was cool! She watches my videos, and so do her little brothers. They're big fans. Shout out to Ivan and Andy. Those are the brothers. So get this. At Subway, you only work with one other person. Just you and them in an empty Subway for 5 hours. I mean, we weren't, like, empty all the time. Okay. And when you're not making sandwiches, you have other stuff to do, like stocking the chips, or we had stuff to do. But okay, we did watch a lot of Netflix and do homework, so I mean, it was that other person you worked with would make or break your entire shift. It wasn't the annoying customers. I kind of got used to annoying customers. So I worked with a lot of crappy people. And I also worked with a lot of people who I would probably never become friends with except in a work setting. You see, you gotta understand the type of people who got jobs at Subway. Potheads. Most of them are potheads. And some of them are really cool. I'm just going to go over a couple of the characters that I worked with. There was Tyler. I freaking love this guy. He smoked a lot of weed. He actually taught me what vaping was, and he got me into Clash of Clans. I actually mentioned him and his girlfriend in my riddles video. I don't know if I ever told him that. And of course, I have to mention Corey. He was cool. We watched How to Get Away with Murder on Netflix, and I've also hung out with him outside of work. What him and Tyler had in common is that they would actually do their job, which you gotta appreciate. Then there was this guy. Get this, who was also named Jared. He loved Marvel, and that's like the only thing he would talk about. I can say these things. He doesn't watch my videos. There was Sarah. She was cool. She made me a bread bowl. And her boyfriend, Jay, he talked about chakras and third eyes. He was
Interesting. And also, there's Anthony. He's cool. What's up, Anthony? For the 100,000 sprinkles video, I actually went back to Subway to use their scale because I knew they had one. And we counted 500 sprinkles again just to be more accurate for the 100,000. And Anthony helped me count instead of working. I mean, at least he got paid minimum wage for it. So two more stories before I go. One time, Jared asked me to take out this pile of trash, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put this pile of trash in the dumpster. And as I was taking it out, I saw that there was a chip poster in the pile, and I thought, this is too cool to throw away. I'm gonna keep it. So I took it home with me, and then the next day when I went in, people were saying, oh, where's the chip poster? We can't find the chip poster. We haven't seen it anywhere. And I'm thinking, I have the poster. I decided not to tell anyone that I had the poster. And it's still hanging up in my room. Sorry, boss, if you're finding out about this now. Okay, and then the other story. I was working with a manager, and we were just making sandwiches like usual. And I noticed that when we toasted a sandwich, it would burn the paper a little on the edges. That probably shouldn't be happening. So then a customer asks for just bacon toasted. And the boss lady puts some bacon on paper, and then puts it in the toaster. And we don't have a setting for just bacon. So then when she opens the toaster, there was a fire on the bacon. So then she starts to whack it with the little metal tray thing, but all she ended up doing was fanning the flames, making the fire bigger. You got this, right? Then I went in the back and I got the fire extinguisher and I actually used it. I single-handedly saved that Subway. Wait, what have I done? Is it okay if the bacon's a little crispy and has nitrogen and carbon dioxide stuff on it?
Supermarket, gonna cop some rhubarb. I reach into my pocket, it's time to get charged. I'm paying cash and I know what happens next is strange. I flash a stunning smile and say,
you can keep the change.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. You can have that money, it's yours. And also coins are uncomfortable in my pockets. Sitting by my computer, mom comes inside the lair.
It's smelling like a sewer, you should go get some air.
I'm getting up and stretch, I'm filling up with pride. I open up the door and put a
single foot outside.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I leave my house, so help me. I'm gonna put my foot back inside of my house now.
My lifestyle's quite unhealthy, I snacked recording this. Got an expanding belly, can't find a shirt that fits. From my chair to the kitchen, from my snack bowl to the brim. Yeah, I know that might look bad, but then I
sign up for a gym.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I'm a gym member, go get ripped. And I will go there sometime, I just haven't decided on a date yet.
I'm chillin' out in class, my teacher's such a jerk. And suddenly he asks,
where is your homework?
All my friends in panic, no, was that today? I slap mine on the desk and say,
I'm gonna get an A.
Plus.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I do my homework, model student. Turns out I plagiarized and now I'm in detention.
My mom is back again.
Can you take out the trash?
Her mind was blown right then.
I did it before you asked.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I do my chores for my man. Couldn't find a trash can, so I dumped it in the ocean.
It's just a regular day, or is it grandma? No, someone's changing age and it isn't grandpa. Other grandsons may just write on Facebook walls, but I am grandma's special boy, so
I'm gonna call.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I remember birthdays for generations. You better think of me when you're drafting up your will.
I'm hanging out with Quinston, he is the coolest guy. Got 30k on Insta, always wear suit and tie. I'll tell him about how good I am, but he says,
bro, the people who are really good don't brag about it, though.
What? You're saying that bragging about all the nice things you've done misses the whole point of doing nice things in the first place?
Oh, what? Am I a good person?
Oh, and I gotta delete this song. Wait, it's already on YouTube and Spotify? Well, hopefully no one will listen to it.
Jeff, you have the board.
I'll take random James trivia for 400, Alex.
This was James's first career choice before his YouTube channel kicked off.
Oh, I know this one. What is a male prostitute?
Okay, that bit's done now. Male prostitute was never a career goal.
Well, I mean, it's not completely off the table. You never know how YouTube will turn out. If you didn't know this Odd Ones Out trivia, I wanted to be a math teacher when I grew up. My dream job was actually a cartoonist. But since me and my parents didn't think I'd be able to make any money drawing pictures, I chose a math teacher as my I'll settle for this job. I mean, I like math, so I wouldn't have hated being a math teacher. And I'm also probably good at teaching children. I haven't checked, though, but how hard can it be? Listen, kids, I have 2.7 million subs on YouTube, so if you want a shout-out, you'll have to do the homework. And I thought that a teaching job would give me enough free time to doodle cartoons, so being a math teacher would have been perfect. But oh boy, that did not turn out how I expected. If for some reason my channel died and I stopped making YouTube videos, I would probably go back to school and finish my math education major. And then I'd be teaching a class and then one of my students would find out that I used to do YouTube, and then they'd say, "Mr. James, are you the Odd Ones Out?"
The Odd Ones Out? I haven't heard that name in years.
You shouldn't smoke in front of children, Mr. James. I just want to point this out. In my peeing video, I drew my first grade teacher like this, and in my Harry the Moth video, I drew my kindergarten teacher like this. Do you have an explanation on why they're drawn so similar?
Yeah, I was lazy.
Teachers play such an important role for children, and if I'm being honest, I don't think they get paid enough to take their job seriously. A good teacher can make you excited to learn the material and actually teach you, while a bad teacher can not only waste your time and not teach you anything, but also crush your dreams. I took choir in 9th grade. Everyone had to take it, okay? It was a prep school. I'm not weird. And one time while we were singing a song, the teacher said, "Stop! Who's flat?" Then she pointed at a boy and told him, "You, sing." And he sang for a bit. Then she pointed at another boy, "You, sing." Then she went through a couple more, and then she pointed to me and said, "You, sing." And I sung. "Stop! James, during the next song, don't sing." Either she had really good hearing, or I was just that terrible at singing. Now, I really hated choir, so if given the choice to sing or not sing, I would choose not every time. But what if I actually wanted to be a singer, and when I sang just then, I was trying my hardest? That would have been soul-crushing! I would have given up on music right then and there. Thankfully, my art teacher was a lot more laid back. She definitely had favorite students, and I wasn't one of them, but she never told anyone not to draw. One time I showed my art teacher my newest comic, which at the time was this one, and without telling her that I was the one who made it, I asked, "What do you think of this art style?" And she said, "Oh, I hate it. But it's fine if you like it. In my classroom, we try to go for realism. But people with that art style can still have successful careers." She said she hated it. Teachers just need to be more supportive with students and teach them in creative ways. That's why I think so many people hate math. You just haven't had a teacher that made you want to learn.
You'd pay attention and study for the tests if I was your math teacher. Wouldn't you?
Don't get me wrong, teaching isn't an easy job. And even the best teacher can't make everyone in their class excited to learn. I mean, I probably could, but there's definitely a difference between a good and bad teacher. I had this French teacher in 9th grade, and she made me really hate French, and by association, the entire country of France. She spoke English on the first day of class, and then only spoke French for the rest of the year. We were in French 1, by the way. I didn't understand anything that was going on. I would just tune her out. I'd be doodling on a piece of paper, and then people would get out their textbooks and start flipping through it, and then I'd think, "Oh, we're doing this now?" I didn't learn anything in that class. Honestly, I barely know any French. This is all the French words that I know. I can count to 10. Ou, du, trois, carte, cinq, six, sept, huit, neuf. Okay, I can only count to 9. And I know that Eiffel Tower is Tour Eiffel, quack is coin, and door is portal. My twin sister, who was in the same class and had the same living conditions as me, turned out a lot different. She learned a lot of French and continued to take classes after 9th grade. So maybe this whole knowledge thing has a lot to do with the student and not the teacher.
Nah, it's the teacher's fault. Did anyone else, when you were little, think that your teacher lived at the school? Because I remember one time my kindergarten teacher came to school in her pajamas and told us that she lived at the school. And that made perfect sense. Yeah, this is your home. This is the only place they ever see you. Therefore, you live here.
Man, I wish I could work in my pajamas.
When I went to community college, I had a math teacher who was this old grandpa, and on the first day, he told us that he never missed a class in 20 years. But then, the very next day, he didn't show up. Now, in college, teachers not showing up to class is pretty normal. Or at least it was in the colleges I went to. It happened more times than it did in high school, that's for sure. That's something to look forward to, seniors. Every time it does happen, there's always that one kid who will say, you know, there's a rule that if the teacher doesn't show up within the first 15 minutes of class, then you can leave. I don't know if that rule is true, but I'm not going to look it up. Because I like that rule, and I want it to be true. And I don't even go to college anymore, so why does it matter? So teachers not showing up, that's not too abnormal, but since this old guy told us he never missed a day of class in 20 years, we thought he died. But nope, he just missed a day. He showed up the third day, I don't know what his excuse was, because after I saw him, I thought, oh good, he's alive. And then I stopped paying attention, because community college sucks. I'd say that my favorite teacher would be my 11th grade AP US History teacher. I liked him because it was obvious that he liked the material, and he would teach us in a way that was fun and interesting. He was also a more laid-back and generally a funny person. He's the teacher that I want to be. He gave me a compliment once that has always stuck with me. He was telling the class about the AP test, which is the super important open-ended essay test that we took at the end of the year, and if we did well on it, the grade would count for college credit. So like a week before the test, our teacher was preparing us, and he said, guys, don't try and be funny on the AP test. The graders don't have a sense of humor. Except James. James can be funny on the test. Aww, that compliment made me so happy and confident. I don't know how serious my teacher was when he said that, and he probably doesn't even remember saying it, but I really appreciated it. I ended up getting a 3 on the test, which is only partial credit in select colleges, so maybe I'm not funny. That was 11th grade. In 12th, I took all AP classes, but I didn't take any of the AP tests. I was too apathetic. But I turned out fine. Actually, no. My favorite teacher is my 9th grade English teacher, who emailed me and said he watches my videos. Hi, Mr. Batman. Sorry I plagiarized the Berlin Wall essay. I really wanted to talk about my 9th grade poetry teacher. Yes, I took choir, French, and poetry all in 9th grade. It was a preparatory school. That teacher was definitely something, but this video is getting too long, so I'll have to make a part 2. Hey, are you gonna make a video about this?
Probably not. Are you?
Only if something interesting happens.
I want to tell you all the story about what happened at Mr. Beast's 100k YouTuber Battle Royale. This is going to be quite a long video, so some of the drawings are going to be done by other people, and I'm going to be recording this on different microphones, so sorry if I sound different. I'm not that sorry, I don't care. And I want to tell this story in its entirety. I don't want to cut anything out or split it into two videos, because the story I'm talking about is already up on Mr. Beast's channel, so what's the point of making people wait for a conclusion when you can just go and see what happened? If you've already seen Mr. Beast's video, which a lot of you probably have, then this story has already been spoiled for you, and you know how it's going to turn out. But you should still stick around, because I'm going to go into detail about the events that led up to the big fight, and sprinkle in just a healthy amount of embellishment. And if you live under a rock and don't know what I'm talking about or who this Mr. Beast character is, then pull up a chair and let me explain studios, because this is going to be quite the video. This is Mr. Beast, a 20-year-old YouTuber that after a couple of years of making cringy Minecraft intro compilations and how much money does X YouTuber make, he started uploading some unique challenge videos, but they weren't your normal challenge videos you see on YouTube, like the Cinnamon Challenge or the
In My Feelings Challenge.
He challenged his endurance by making videos like reading the dictionary in one sitting, or counting to 200,000, road to a million. Then he started one-upping his challenges by making some big and questionable financial decisions, like buying 100 T-Rex costumes or literally giving out tens of thousands of dollars to people. His videos got insanely popular, which meant he earned more money, which meant he could spend even bigger quantities of money on videos and in turn get more views because of how crazy they were, and then he got more money, and the cycle just continued, making him one of the fastest growing channels on YouTube. In 2015, he celebrated his 7k subscriber milestone, and in 2019, he's got over
16
million subscribers. The dude's been blowing up. And about a year ago, I sent him a Twitter DM saying, where do you buy so many things in bulk? Like, random example, sprinkles. Because I just wanted to know who his supplier was, because Walmart
banned me. We ended up chatting on Discord for a bit, and he told me that the reason he makes videos is to entertain people. And with the amount of money he's giving away, and the fact that he's probably losing money on some of these videos, it's obvious that he's not making these videos for the money. And I respect that. Also in the call, he told me he was playing Fortnite, and I said that my favorite video game was Tetris, and he said, yeah, you seem like the kind of person that would like Tetris. What's that supposed to mean, beast? Well, who's laughing now? Tetris is the best battle royale game out there. Tetris 99. Download it for free on the Switch today. They don't sponsor me. So that's who Mr. Beast is for the six people watching who didn't know. Fast forward to February 2019. I'm at VidCon London. Me and Dave from Boy in a Band were getting ready to perform Life is Fun in front of a bunch of UK blokes, and I was browsing Twitter and I saw this tweet from the Beast himself. Attention Epic Gamers. On March 6th, I'm hosting an in-real-life YouTuber battle royale with airsoft guns. Royal. That says royal. I'm just going to use a computer voice.
Winner gets $100,000. It will be in LA and similar to Dude Perfects' video, which BTW I really enjoyed. Reply if you're a YouTuber and want in.
The tweet was only sent 10 minutes ago. It was pretty fresh. And looking through my pocket calendar, I wasn't doing anything that day. I could make it to the event. I asked Dave, do you think I should do it? I forgot what he said, but he probably said something like,
oh yeah, man, you'd be so great at it. When did you get so handsome? You're the best!
So I replied to the tweet, I can make it. Then I got added to a group chat with six other YouTubers, so I wrote, hello, competition. And the very next thing I saw was Mr. Beast added Logan Paul. And my mind went, Logan Paul? YouTuber's number one storytime animator Logan Paul? Recently came out as a flat earther Logan Paul? That Logan Paul? But then Logan Paul left because he's a coward. So in the group chat, Mr. Beast explained the rules. It would be an airsoft battle and everyone would have three balloons attached to them. And once your three balloons got popped, you were out. This match wasn't going to be a free-for-all like the Hunger Games. We were going to be on teams of three. So I was going to get paired up with two random people. I mean, I would have preferred if one of them had been a Paul boy, but no big deal. Hopefully whoever my teammates are would know what they're doing and carry the team, because I sure as heck wouldn't. Jaden Animations was also at VidCon, and I told her, guess what I'm doing?
I saw your tweet. That's pretty epic, James. You're the best,
she said. I said, Jaden, the battle's going to be in teams of three. I don't know anyone else that's going. Do you want to go to war with me? Now, this was a first for me. Never in my life have I ever had to ask someone, hey, do you want to fight in an airsoft battle royale against a bunch of other YouTubers for the chance to win $100,000? And Jaden said,
yeah, sure.
I asked Mr. Beast, are you still looking for more people for the YouTube Royal? My friend Jaden is interested, and I think it would be good if me and her were on a team because our channels are so similar. And he replied with,
yes, she got Pewds and Rewind. 100% want her in.
And I was like, oh, yeah, she did do that. I probably didn't have to send you her channel. So Jaden never publicly said she was going to be in the fight, but she was. Surprise! Mr. Beast sent us a list of people that still needed to be on a team. Since it was only me and Jaden, I got to pick someone from the list to be the third member of our team. It made me feel like the popular kids when they got to pick teams for kickball. First time I got to feel that experience, actually. I noticed one name on the list. Anthony Padilla. I've been to conventions, and I've seen how young some of you are, so I gotta explain who Anthony is. Just bear with me, big kids. Before some of you were born, there was this big YouTube channel called Smosh. And when I was 12, that was one of the YouTube channels that I watched. So imagine how gleeful I was when a big part of my childhood asked me to do a couple videos with him to go up on his channel. Since Anthony and I had already done two videos together, and he's done one with Jaden, and he pet my dog, I thought we were close enough to have him on the team. Also, two of the three people on our team are vegan, so we decided to name ourselves 66% Vegan. That's actually not true, I made that up. The day was fast approaching, and I'm gonna level with you. We did not have high hopes for winning. Anthony tweeted out,
tomorrow I'll be in Mr. Beast's 100K YouTube Battle Royale with my teammates, the Odd Ones.